Welcome to the Baseball America podcast, our first college podcast of the 2016 season. I'm Teddy Cahill. Here with me, Mike Lanana and Jim Schoenard, and we're here to talk about the top 25. The preseason top 25 is released today, and so you know, it's an exciting time. College baseball is just a few weeks away. The top 25 is the first thing you know we do here at Baseball America to get started with the college season. So, you know, the preview is rolling out starting today. We'll have capsules on all of the top 25 teams, five per day, for the rest of this week. And then next week, you'll see the All-America teams, and our conference previews will start up. So there's a lot going on, a lot of college content over at baseballamerica.com. And are you guys ready for the season to get going?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I just hope it's a little warmer than it was last year.
Can't be any worse than last year.
Yeah.
I was talking to Coach O'Connor from Virginia, who got their first month of home games wiped out last year, and joked that, you know, can't be any worse than last year, but, you know, knock on wood. So hopefully they have some better luck. Hopefully we all have better luck.
I mean, it was such a mild winter at the start, and now all of a sudden we're getting all these winter storms. And I know a lot of the coaches early on were saying that, you know, why couldn't this weather be what they would have in February? So, you know, hopefully this is just getting it out of the way and get some warmer weather here for February 19 on opening day. You know, obviously we're all excited about that, and these coaches are ready to get going, and so are the players. You know, so the top 25 this year is, you know, it's an interesting one. There are a lot of really good teams here, and a lot of really good programs that have been good and are looking to get back to Omaha. You know, number one this year is Florida. It's the third time the Gators have been preseason number one. They were number one in 2011 and 2012, and then number two was Louisville. And it just seemed like those were the top two teams for us. That they had separated, those two teams had separated based on talent and, you know, what they did last year. Florida getting to the College World Series and Louisville having a lot of success in the ACC their first year in the conference, but, you know, ultimately falling in super regionals. So when we look at these teams, it's there's just so much returning talent. The Gators have their entire weekend rotation back. Louisville returns most of its pitching staff and a lot of offense, and the Gators have a lot of offense. And you know, it just really does look like these two teams are the best two in the college game right now.
Yeah, I think they're both a clear class above everyone else. You know, when we started with the top 25, we knew from the get-go, okay, Florida number one, Louisville number two. And with the rest, there's a little more, you know, arguing and bickering and all of that. But, you know, you look at these two teams, and it's just amazing the depth that they have. You know, and a lot of that with Florida, I mean, they had a lot of young talent last year that's a little bit older now. And, you know, obviously they returned the entire weekend rotation, which is going to be scary. I mean, you know, everyone talks about AJ Puck, but Logan Shore is—he's a monster. So, and then you look at Louisville and getting Kyle Funkhauser back, which, you know, obviously we've—that's something we've discussed a lot in the past. But, you know, that's not something they were necessarily expecting before the draft and before that 1 month kind of plummeted his draft stock. So, you know, they're two scary teams, like you said. It's going to be fun to see which one ends up. I think they're both Omaha teams.
Yeah, I mean, but like you're saying, I mean, Louisville is just, that's just a loaded team, and certainly Florida is too. And it feels like last year we had Vanderbilt and LSU kind of as a clear-cut top two, and this sort of reminded me of that a little bit, where you had two teams at the top, and then you have this little, you know, you could argue a little bit after that. And but yeah, I mean, with those two teams, I mean, it would be a surprise if they are not up there all year.
Yeah, when we look at Florida, you know, I think it starts with the pitching. You know, Mike mentioned Shore and Puck, and you know, Alex Viedo's back too, and he was very successful on Sundays as a freshman. But with Shore on Friday night, you know, it's just a very consistent performer, and he's done it almost, you know, his entire career. He was the Friday starter during his freshman season, which is exceedingly rare in the SEC. And then Puck, you know, is a little better pro prospect, and he was absolutely dominant in the second half of last season. You know, once he came back from his his suspension, the whole way through, it was he was very instrumental to that team getting to Omaha and winning the SEC tournament. Their offense is very talented as well. Buddy Reed is electric there in center field. And J.J. Schwarz behind the plate hit 18 home runs as a freshman. And Mike Rivera also, behind the plate, very good for Florida as a freshman. And Peter Alonso, if he can stay healthy, that gives them more power, over at first base. And they had the number two recruiting class in the country, just adding, more talent to a team that really didn't need it. You can't have too much talent, but they, the talent level in Gainesville right now is really impressive. But you can't overlook what Louisville has, because, like Mike mentioned, you got Funkhauser back. You have the freshman of the year, Brendan McKay, who's, an outstanding two-way player. Corey Ray in the outfield is, every bit as good as Buddy Reed and maybe a little bit better even. And, just up and down both of those lineups are plenty of players that impact the game in a lot of different ways. And I don't know right now what would happen if they played on if they had a series, but I know that would be very exciting. And if we do get that in Omaha, even just a matchup, I think that would be great for fans. The way it's shaping up right now, what we think these two teams can be.
Definitely. And you look at Louisville, and everyone talks about Ray, but they do have a lot of balance in that lineup too. They bring back Solak, and Brendan McKay really came into his own as the cleanup hitter late last year and had a nice, underrated year with the bat. Obviously he's a pitching prospect first, but he's certainly someone who could hit well in the middle of the order. And I know they're excited about what Devin Harrison is doing at shortstop, taking over for Sutton Whiting there. Had a up and down year as a freshman last year. So, and then you can't ignore the bullpen. Nick Birdie there in the back end, throwing 98-99 with a nasty slider. One of the best relievers in college baseball, you could argue. So, yeah, they're certainly both teams. You certainly wouldn't want to face them on a weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, one thing about both of these teams too is that we saw a lot of some of these guys during the summer with Team USA, and they were by and large were the stars of Team USA too. I mean, it's the guys that are you're going to see get picked pretty high in the draft. Jimmer, what did you think of the Gators over the last few years? They've had teams like this before. They've had preseason number ones. They've had weighty expectations. Do you think that the program is kind of used to this by now?
Well, certainly the coaching staff should be. The players. Last year. They were so young. They were very young last year, relatively speaking. When they got to Omaha with the, they had the Mike Zanino and that core. They got to Omaha three years in a row, and by then they were pretty used to it. But obviously they've kind of had to restock the cupboard. That never really stops. The way they recruit, but yeah, last year in Omaha they kind of ran into some more experienced teams that had been there before, whereas they were. The players, anyway, they were the newcomers compared to with TCU and Vandy and Virginia. So this year, with all these guys coming back, with as loaded as talented as they are, with Puck and Fado and all those guys, and Shore obviously. They'll be favored every weekend. They should win. It's hard to imagine them losing as long as they stay healthy. It's hard to imagine them losing many series. It's going to be. Them and Louisville, they're both loaded. And like I said, now Florida has the experience on its side. So when they, provided if they get to Omaha, they won't, nothing will be, no, there won't be any surprises for them. And there's no reason to think they won't be there at the end.
I think one interesting thing about both of these teams is they kind of had disappointing ends to the season. Florida was rolling. Once the postseason came around last year, they won the SEC tournament, and they swept both regionals and super regionals.
They ran into Brandon Waddell.
Right, in Omaha.
The guy who's been there.
They run smack into Virginia, and but they were dominating teams in Omaha that weren't Virginia. They lost 1-0 to Virginia and 5-4, and every other game they were scoring double-digit runs.
Exactly. Yeah, they torched Miami. I mean, they torched Andrew Suarez, great pitcher himself. And but like, kind of, I mean, obviously we'll talk a little bit more about Virginia later. But yeah, I mean, they ran into a team that knew how to win there. Not that Florida doesn't, but because obviously so they did win a couple games. But they ran into kind of a team that wasn't going to be cowed by the bats and all the talent Florida was throwing at them.
And Louisville, obviously, hosting a super regional, hosting Fullerton, comes all the way across the country, and then the way that game, that series ended, Mike, you were there for that. You know, I mean, that has to stick with Louisville a little bit, right?
Yeah, no, it's certainly still in their minds, and I just had a conversation with Kyle Funkhauser a couple of days ago, and he was talking about the emotions from that night. And for those who didn't see how it ended on in extra innings on a ball that may or may not have been fair. It just scraped the foul pole. It was tough to see even from replays, and that's obviously a tough way to lose. It was a hard fought series for both teams, and tip your cap to Cal State Fullerton. They're a gritty, gutty team, and that's what they did, and they overachieved in some ways last year. Of course, having Thomas Eshelman helped, but. No, I mean, I know Louisville has a chip on their shoulders coming into this year. They had made it their goal in 2012 to go to Omaha 3 years in a row, and they were, a ball just being fair, inside the foul pole away from doing that. So certainly they're all thinking about Omaha coming into this year and getting back there.
Well, I know we're going to talk a lot about Florida and Louisville all year long. So let's move on and let's talk about some of these other teams. The top five following those two schools, you got Texas A&M, Virginia, the defending national champions, and Oregon State, who we think is the team to beat out West right now. And then Miami, Vanderbilt, and Cal rounding out your top eight. So I guess right now that's kind of who we're thinking maybe is the Omaha contenders or the favorites for Omaha right now. The interesting thing about the defending national champions is that they return an awful lot, don't they, Jim?
Exactly. Yeah, they have seven regulars back in their lineup. If I can spit that out. Yeah, I mean, they lose their third baseman Kenny Towns, and they lose Joe McCarthy. Obviously, I had to play without him for quite a bit last year, if I can learn how to talk. But yeah, I mean, they have seven guys back, seven guys that played a lot for that championship team. You've got a nice core of sophomores that, Pavin Smith, Daniel Pinero is a junior, Adam Hazley, another sophomore, Ernie Clement, who kind of emerged last year. Kind of that core there with Smith, Pinero, Matt Theis. That's a nice core to build your offense around. All those guys have Omaha experience. Spoke with Brian O'Connor a few days ago, as I mentioned, and they're very excited about Adam Hazley is a guy who's going to take on a bigger role this year offensively. He's their he'll be their everyday center fielder as he was last year, and they'll hope to get more out of him on the mound. So he's kind of a guy to keep in mind that, and he started the second game of the championship series last year against Vandy when they were down 1-0, season on the line, and he had the great game of his life, but he pitched really well for five, six innings, and obviously that's a big experience for him, so he's going to take on a bigger role. They have a lot of experience back. I mean, you kind of compare it to their team from 2014 when they brought back Brandon Downs, Mike Pappy, and that group, Brandon Cogswell, some of those guys, when we ranked that team preseason number one. And O'Connor, this team is, position player wise, this team is in the same level as far as what they bring back, the talent, the experience. I mean, they're going to be really good offensively. Now, the reason why they're fourth and not maybe first or second is the pitching. They get Connor Jones back, and that's big, but they lose an awful lot. I mean, they lose Brandon Waddell, who we talked about, who was so great in Omaha. Lose Josh Spores, who was the MOP of the CWS last year. Lose Nathan Kirby, who was a hero of the final game of the championship series. Those are three really big losses from your pitching staff. So that's really the question for them, is the offense is probably going to have to carry a lot of the load, at least in the first half of the season, until they get things kind of sorted out. And like I said with Hazley, he's the guy that you're going to look to take on a bigger role on the mound. But yeah, I mean, they're going to be – it's Virginia. Virginia's always been able to pitch. They'll figure it out. They'll be there at the end.
Yeah, the park there obviously is a big help for, mm-hmm. for young pitchers trying to figure it out. You know, it being a bit of a pitcher's park, a bit of a pitcher's park is probably an understatement. And you know, the team just has so much coming back up the middle.
Exactly. Yeah, that was like one of the first things O'Connor pointed out is they get both catchers back, Coman and Matt Theis. They have their middle infield back, Clement and Pinero, and they have their center fielder back, Haseley. And that's where you, like you said, that's where you start from. That's what you want. So that's where you kind of build from there and you know, build out.
And you know, Nathan Kirby, you know, went into last year as potentially, you know, a player of the year type guy, but he didn't have that much success before he got injured, or didn't have that type of success mm-hmm. before he got injured, and then he did get injured. And they were able to ride that out.
Exactly.
And
they had to ride out a lot last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they overcame so much last year that if they have, you know, any kind of luck this year on health, you know, that they should be well set up. And they brought in another strong recruiting class, as they always do at Virginia. Brian O'Connor and McMullen do a great job with that. And you know, so I think there's an awful lot to like there. Connor Jones on Friday nights is, you know, going to be, you know, one of the better pitchers in the ACC probably. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know they're gonna be really good. You know, the losses are not insignificant, but I think there's a lot there to make up for that.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with all that, and I do really like Connor Jones. I think he's a name that you're going to hear a lot more, you know, as the draft creeps closer. I mean, he's got electric stuff when he's on. Sometimes the command would get away from him last year. You know, there'd always be one inning where you could kind of get to him. He needs to try to minimize that a bit this year, but certainly the stuff is there, and you know, he has everything in him to be a dominant Friday guy. And I do think, you know, you look up the middle, I think, you know, Pinero is a guy that might be overlooked a little bit too. I think he brings a lot to the table and could be a really productive player for that team.
Then I also mentioned Vanderbilt, number 7. You know, that's the team that Virginia beat in the finals, and the team that beat Virginia in 2014 in the finals. So you know, those two teams have been back-to-back finalists, and Vanderbilt is losing an awful lot from those teams, though. You know, Dansby Swanson, obviously the number 1 overall pick in last year's draft, is gone. The entire weekend rotation is gone for the Commodores. Xander Wheel, their first baseman, is also gone. But this is Vanderbilt, and there are no rebuilding years at Vanderbilt these days. Tim Corbin brings in talent, like incredible talent all the time. They had the number 1 recruiting class this fall, and they have brought in a top 25 recruiting class 11 straight years, which is a record. So there's talent on this team, no doubt. They just now have to step into some bigger roles. And a lot of that will be on players, especially on the pitching side, players that have been there before, guys like Jordan Sheffield and Kyle Wright and John Kilichowski and Ben Bowden, just to name a few. And it's really just a matter of them being able to step up and take on bigger roles. But, I mean, obviously, you guys have seen this program. You saw what they could do out in Omaha, and the culture that they have at Vanderbilt under Tim Corbin is really exceptional. It just seems like they expect to win at all times without having, you know, massive expectations. You know, Tim Corbin works really hard to make sure his guys don't feel that, but it is there.
Exactly. I mean, that is, I think it's kind of one of the hallmarks of that program. Aside, I mean, obviously they produce a lot of talent, they produce high drafts every year, but I mean, they just their teams, just they have such a confidence. They're not like a, you know, puff their chest out program, but they always have this confidence that they're going to find a way to win, and no, you know, whether that's by outscoring you, usually they can outpitch you if they have, you know, when it comes down to it, but they always find a way. And like I said, the talent just never, the, you know, the flow just never stops coming through there. And they do have guys, I mean, they do have like guys like Will Toffey and Roque Coleman, Brian Reynolds, Jaron Kent, all these guys that contributed last year. They'll carry on that culture. Obviously they do have to step into bigger roles, but still, I mean, there's enough, you know, obviously with that coaching staff, I mean, there's enough carryover. I don't think there's going to be much of a drop.
I mean, it's that program is a well-oiled machine. I mean, Teddy, you and I mean, we toured the facilities when we were in Nashville for the ABCA convention, and I mean, there are no players there, but you could just see with the way, you know, binders are perfectly arranged on a desk, and you know, just how meticulous and you know, just how exact everything is, and just, you know, it's just a very professional. I think it might be the best word to describe them. It's just a professional program and a professional atmosphere there. And you can certainly see, like Jim was talking about, the confidence that these players have, that, you know, that little swagger that they have to them, but it isn't over the top for sure. So, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some period of adjustment this year for them, you know, just because there is so much turnover. But obviously you have to like the talent on the team and have to think that by the end of the year, they're going to be where we're used to seeing them.
Yeah, I think this is a team, a Vanderbilt team, and this happens every few years, it seems like, with Vanderbilt, that it's not so much about where they are right now, it's about where they're going to be in June. And with that coaching staff and that talent, we have a lot of faith that they'll get to that level. You know, you might see them take some lumps early on. They're going to play some young players. They're missing, you know, Dansby Swanson. One of the things about him beyond his incredible on-field talents is the leadership and the makeup and everything that he brings to a team. And Carson Fulmer, who is their Friday night starter, is really the same way for the pitching staff. And so losing those two guys is more than just losing, you know, two top 10 picks. It's about losing the leadership that they also provide. But, you know, the guys are going to step up. And you know, when I spoke with Tim Corbin last week, you know, he's not going to be the one telling guys that they have to step up. It's kind of just an understood thing, it seems like. And you know, but he talked about how, you know, guys, they have plenty of other pressure that he doesn't want to add to their pressure. He wants them to just to be the best players they can be. And you know, so Vanderbilt is always trying to balance the expectations of winning and of producing high draft picks and of juniors, you know, trying to get to those levels, you know, with the development and the I guess the nurturing nature of that program. We have a lot of faith in Vanderbilt right now, I guess, but it is going to be more of a what they're, I guess, ranking them as high as we do, it's more about where we think they will be more than, you know, what they might do in the first few weekends as they try and figure out what their pitching roles are. You know, they have, you know, not only do they have to replace three starting pitchers, but if they move, say, Kyle Wright from the bullpen to the rotation, then now you have to find a new closer. So there's a lot of moving parts there, but, you know, that staff, you know, Scott Brown handles the pitching there, and you know, Travis Jewett and Tim Corbin, you know, they're going to figure it out. It's just a matter of when, I think. You know, so who else in this group do you guys like here? You know, we got Texas A&M also in the SEC, Oregon State out west, Cal, you know, also in the Pac-12, trying to get back to Omaha for the first time since 2011, and we got Miami, who made it back last year for the first time in a few years. Yeah, who jumps out from that group for you guys?
Well, as somewhat of the California correspondent on this staff, I'll talk about the Pac-12 teams in this group. You know, I do like Oregon State and Cal a lot. I think the Pac-12 as a whole, especially at the top, is going to be really strong this year, as you can tell by looking at our rankings. You know, Oregon State last year was a very, very young team. It's a team that wasn't in our preseason top 25, and you know, people kept badgering us about it, you know, as the year went on, and eventually, you know, they worked their way in. And, you know, they went through some growing pains last year, but really came together near the end, had a tough regional, but they return basically that entire team. I mean, they do lose some significant pieces in Andrew Moore, which obviously that's very significant, and Jeffrey Hendricks as well in center field. But I think there's more than enough talent there to compensate for that, and they bring in obviously a strong recruiting class too. You know, they're going to have some roles that they need to figure out. They have three talented infielders in Trevor Morrison and Madrigal and Greenier that they're going to try to, you know, figure out who's going to play shortstop, who's going to play second, who's going to play third. And I don't know that they have that, or at least publicly have that totally figured out yet, but they're all talented there. And obviously KJ Harrison, you know, their first baseman last year had just a tremendous freshman year, you know, lots to like with him, a lot of power. So they're going to hit, they're going to be an offensive ball club. And I think there's enough pitching there with Drew Rasmussen last year, who as great as KJ Harrison did on the offensive side, Rasmussen, you know, was similar pitching wise as a freshman, and you know he's going to lead that rotation, and you know they're optimistic that he's not really going to miss a beat from what Andrew Moore did last year. So they're a dangerous team, and a team that, you know, you talk to the other coaches in the Pac-12, they all, you know, see how talented they are. That they could certainly be the team to beat, but Cal was right there with them too, bringing back Dalton Jeffries, and basically, you know, most of last year's team. They're going to miss Ursegg and Chris Paul in that lineup, but there's still a veteran presence there and a lot of guys returning. And, you know, they're a team that's very motivated, you know, because, you know, a few years ago that program was on its way out, and now they're back and, you know, made it to the regional last year and gave Texas A&M, and obviously another very strong team, a run for their money. It was probably the best regional, the best TV. You know, I watched all of them, basically, and that was the one that really caught my eyes. So, you know, there's a lot to like with them, and, you know, I think you could really argue for which team is the better team in the Pac-12. Obviously, we have Oregon State a little bit ahead, but they're both very, very strong.
The thing about those two teams, Oregon State and Cal, and I'm not saying this is why we think that they're the best two teams in the Pac-12, but I do love that this is the 10th anniversary of the O-State Ballers, and this is the 5th anniversary of the Cal Baseball reinstatement wrap. So, yeah, that's a thing that I like. The teams on the field are obviously very talented as well. And the interesting thing about that College Station Regional is you know, we got A&M and Cal now, both here in our top eight going into this season, and that was one of the most closely contested regionals. A&M, the whole postseason, was nothing but close games. Yeah. They go on to the TCU to play TCU in Super Regionals, and in all, A&M played 8 games in the NCAA tournament. They played 88 innings, and 4 of those 8 games went into extra innings, and 5 of the games A&M was playing win-or-go-home baseball. So that's a battle-tested A&M team that started off last season 24-0, you know, before running into some more trouble in the SEC. So if they're a very veteran, very experienced group, and you know, we expect them to bounce back. And Rob Childress has a team that definitely can compete in the SEC now after going through that a few years. So, Jimmer, that leaves Miami to you. You know, what do we got on the Hurricanes as they try and get back to Omaha again?
Well, certainly they've got plenty of experience coming back. I mean, they do lose Andrew Suarez, as we talked about, but you got, you know, just a stacked lineup. I mean, you guys like Willie Abreu, Zach Collins. I mean, there's a lot to like in that lineup. They're just it's just gonna be a physical offensive team that, I mean, and Jacob Hayward kind of had he was a breakout guy. He was kind of a hero in Omaha last year, and you know, Carl Chester is a good athlete out in center field. I mean, there's a lot they can do. There's a lot of different ways they can score runs. I mean, they pretty much, you know, other than, you know, Florida kind of, that's kind of the one hump they have to get over is Florida, just historically, over like the last, since O'Sullivan's been there. But other than that, I mean, they were just a machine offensively last year. Now they do lose, you know, George Eskandarian and, you know, David Thompson, who was the, Thompson hit a lot of home runs. He's not there anymore, but anyway, they've still got a lot of guys back that can hit, that can do some damage. They'll put up a lot of runs. Also, like we said, they do have to replace Suarez, but Thomas Woodry's a, you know, just a great college pitcher, you know, lefty to have at the top of your rotation. He was huge for them last year. They've got some, you know, talent. They kind of are relying on some freshmen in the rest of that rotation, but, you know, they still have got talented guys. And like I said, with that offense, you've got some margin for error. And Brian Garcia is an experienced guy. Cooper Hammond's a guy experienced at the back of the bullpen. So when they're in close games, they should be all right. I mean, yeah, I mean, between them and Louisville and Virginia, I mean, the top of the ACC is going to be very strong.
You mentioned Miami having to get over Florida, and one of the big, big early season series is Florida goes to Miami in the second weekend of the season. And that is just going to be a fun series, you know, to see how it unfolds, to see those two programs going at it. And, you know, hopefully they don't get matched up in super regionals. You know, if the way we have it now, they, you know, I guess we would have them both as national seeds. And
yeah,
so therefore, they would avoid that. But, you know, hopefully.
It has been the NCAA's want to put them together time and again.
And, you know, I know coaches hate the way, you know, they would love to see, you know, the NCAA committee seed 1 to 16 to avoid that.
It's kind of crazy they don't.
It is.
Just, I remember asking, that came up in the conference call with Dave Heakey last year, and, you know, after they announced the field, and it's kind of like, yeah, we've brought it up, but there's no real motivation to do it. It's like, come on.
I guess my
they do it in softball.
Yeah, they
do. So they can't say it's like to save money, because, I mean, they do it in softball.
My dream, I guess, would be to seed 1 to 16 and to put super regionals at neutral sites. But that's just a dream. So hopefully, we can avoid Miami. Yeah, hopefully we can avoid Miami and Florida in the postseason until Omaha.
Which we were able to do.
Last year, we got Florida and Florida State in a very non-competitive, a surprisingly non-competitive Super Regional.
Well, I mean, if it had been Miami and Florida, that would have been non-competitive.
Also, would have been non-competitive.
They were in the same pool in Omaha. They played twice, and that was Florida won by a combined like 15 runs.
Yeah,
in the two
not
games.
Go well for the Canes.
So Florida, going back to...
They'd probably rather just be on the other side of the bracket this year.
Yeah, going back to where we were at the start of this, Florida, very good, and best team in the state, and I guess in the country as well. Rounding out the top 10, you know, we got Oklahoma State, we got UCLA, moving on, LSU, Houston, Louisiana Lafayette, Oregon, and Michigan, and then Southern Cal checking in at 16. So I guess... that next group is kind of what we think is super regional teams.
Potential hosts and all that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, could see some fun regionals there at those home parks. And you know, we don't want to break down all 25 teams. We'd be here a long time. You know, but some of these teams definitely are worth talking about. And you know, when you look at a team like LSU, I think that's just one of the most fascinating teams this season, and one of the hardest to figure out how to rank them right now. They return almost their entire pitching staff, but they lost 8 of 9 starters in their lineup, and included in that is Alex Bregman, the number 2 overall pick, and frankly, maybe the most important player on any one team in college baseball. I mean, Andrew Benintendi at Arkansas certainly would be in contention for that. But Alex Bregman just was the heart and soul of that LSU team last year. And he's gone. And, you know, so they lost 4 seniors, and they lost 4 underclassmen to the draft. But they bring back Alex Lane, who had a case to be freshman of the year. He went 12-0 with a sub-2 ERA in the SEC. That's pretty good. And Jared Poche, who was their Friday starter last year, won 9 games. He's won 18 games in his first 2 years at LSU. So yeah, they got one of the best 1-2 punches in the country, but it's just a matter of can the young players on the offensive side, you know, contribute quickly? And it's not going to be a bunch of freshmen. They had the number 1 recruiting class in the country 2 years ago. Those guys are sophomores now. It's going to kind of be incumbent on them more, even more than the freshmen that they brought in this year, who are also very good. You know, but what do you guys make of LSU? You know, they obviously ended the season in Omaha last year, and now they have a little bit of a retooling project there for Paul Mainieri.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time a team only brought back one regular position player. I'll say they do have other guys that played, but Jake Fraley being the only true starter coming back in the lineup. I mean, they're up here because they do have talent. They have a ton of pitching. And just kind of look at some of these guys. I mean, I know they like Mike Papirski a lot, the catcher, who's was kind of their backup last year. So he'll be a big part of it. And they've got, you know, Kramer Robertson's a guy that played, you know, an athletic dude at second base. So, I mean, they've got, you know, the tools that are there. Like, it's kind of, obviously they have some questions to answer just as far as how this kind of all comes together offensively, but I mean, yeah, you look at that pitching staff. I mean, that's that's enough to carry you through some weekends where you're probably not going to score a lot of runs in the SEC. You can, but you can win some 3-2, 2-1 type games with those guys.
Yeah, I would certainly put their pitching staff up there with anyone else in the SEC. I mean, it's a very, very strong staff, and you know, Alex Lang is, I mean, you read those numbers. They're, it's just kind of insane to go 12-0, 1.97 in the SEC. I mean, as a freshman, you know, let alone anyone doing that, is incredible. So, you know, I expect maybe not a 12-0 year, but another strong year out of him. I mean, he's got the stuff and the poise, obviously. So I think it's kind of a similar situation in some ways to what Vanderbilt is going through this year. Obviously, you know, there's more turnover here with LSU, you know, looking at their starting lineup. But, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period, I'm sure, there. But, you know, just like with Vanderbilt, you know, with this coaching staff and just the amount of sheer talent that they have, you know, it's not going to be a surprise at all to look up and see them, you know, maybe in a super regional or, you know, possibly even in Omaha if they put all the pieces together in the right way.
One thing about Alex Lane and trying to repeat that season, you know, when I spoke with Coach Maneri, you know, he mentioned, you know, just how difficult it's going to be to improve on that. It's almost impossible, right? 12-0, 1.97. But, you know, he thinks Alex Lane has gotten better. You know, he thinks that working with Alan Dunn, LSU's great pitching coach, you know, and being a year older, a year more experienced, that Alex Lane is a better pitcher now than he was last year. And that's kind of crazy to imagine, but, you know, there's no reason why it couldn't be true. You know, he's had time to improve and to work on some things, and they don't know which one of them's gonna go out there on Friday nights yet. But I don't think there's a wrong choice between Poche and Lane. You've got the experience with both of them, and both of them are great draft prospects. Lane obviously not until next year, but Poche has really come on. Scouts liked him in the fall, maybe a little more than they had. You know, finding a little more velocity and. You know, he's going to be a pretty good draft pick himself this year. You know, and Mike, I know you're pretty excited about what UCLA has been able to put together. They've got a bit of a retool themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, lose James Caprillion, lose Kevin Kramer, their shortstop, and David Berg, obviously their closer, is now gone as well. But you know, they brought in another highly ranked recruiting class. That's what John Savage does out there. He just finds all the really good Southern California kids and gets them to UCLA, and so they're a little bit like Virginia and Vanderbilt here. That, you know, yeah, they lost some, but what they have coming in is definitely going to make up for that.
Right. I mean, in a lot of ways, they did kind of lose the core of the team. You know, losing Kramer, losing Caprillion, you know, Watson, guys like that. But you know, they do bring back a lot too. I mean, you know, there's a veteran presence there, with, especially in the outfield with Christoph Bono and Brett Stevens and Court Peterson. And then bringing back Eric Filia as well. He's missed the past 2 years, you know, one with injury, one because of academic suspension. You know, bringing him back after a big summer in the Northwoods League, he's swinging the bat really, really well. I mean, he could help make up for the loss, you know, in offense that they get from losing some of those guys. You know, there's a lot of talent there. I think they're expecting more out of Sean Bouchard, who had a kind of a rough freshman year. They're moving him to first base, flip-flopping him with Persico, who's moving to third, who, you know, they're kind of excited about as well, as a guy who could certainly help his prospect status playing at third base. So I think they're going to lose a little, you know, offensive firepower. Last year, they were more of an offensive club than I think many are used to seeing out of UCLA. The past 2 years, they've really thrived on pitching, and I think it's going to be pitching that's going to carry them ultimately again. You know, even though they lose Poteet and Caprillion and Watson, they have Griffin Canning coming back, who was excellent as a freshman last year and a guy who really knows what he's doing on the mound. They're moving Grant Dyer from a setup role to the rotation, and they think he's taken a big jump. A guy who's, you know, 90-93, he's got a power curveball, and he's tinkering with a cutter and a developing changeup as well. And, you know, he's a guy who could, you know, junior year, who could emerge as a significant draft prospect. And then, you know, they have a couple of talented freshmen as well. You know, Kyle Molnar is a little bit ahead of Justin Hooper in terms of polish at this point, and he's projected as the Sunday guy. But even though they're gonna miss Berg, you know, arguably the greatest, you know, college closer of all time, I think their bullpen is still gonna be fairly stacked. And you know, they bring back most of the bridge to Berg that they had last year, and they have a recruit in Brian Gatsby, who is similar to Berg in some ways, and his arm angle and his ability to give hitters a different look in the back end. So I think there are a lot of tools there at Savage's disposal that he can use, and I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be a very good club. I don't think they're the top team in the Pac-12 right now. I don't think you could say that with how much they've lost, but they could certainly work their way up there.
So, now, Jim, let's talk about the top team in the Big 12.
Yep.
We got Oklahoma State as the Big 12 favorites. They're bringing back an experienced club. They're not going to have to worry about inexperience like some of these other teams. But you know, what makes the Cowboys this year the team to beat in the Big 12?
Well, certainly the experience is a big part of it. They bring back, I think, their top three hitters, and you know, obviously they get Donnie Walton back to be their senior shortstop, which was kind of a bonus. He was, I can't remember what round it was. I mean, he was kind of like, what, like a 35th round pick or something like that. But anyway, they get him back as a senior. You know, he's a huge part of that lineup. He's kind of the centerpiece. And they, you know, Ryan Sluter, who was the number one prospect in the Cal Collegiate League. So they're just expect to be kind of like they were last year. They're just a very diverse offensive team. They could score in a lot of different ways. They could hit home runs. They could play small ball. They should be very athletic. They should be able to kind of do the same kind of thing. They've got some junior college transfers they're excited about. So those guys should all be able to contribute. Guys like Garrett Benge. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but you know, Colin Thoreau at catcher, they're excited about. So they're a very balanced offensive team. And on the mound, you know, they lose Michael Freeman, you know, an All-American, Big 12 Pitcher of the Year. But they should be all right. I mean, Michael Mertz, the guy coming off injury last year, but he should be, you know, moved to the front of the rotation. He's got good stuff. You know, they're kind of sorting out the rest of the rotation and their bullpen because they lose a couple of – they lost John Perrin, another starter, and they lost their closer as well. But, I mean, they've got – you know, they've got the tools to work with. They've got the arms to be very good. They're just kind of sorting it out, but the pieces are there. And Josh Holliday is excited about he thinks they can be as good on the mound as they were last year. And, I mean, the Big 12 in general, I mean, obviously last year was a two-horse race, really, with them and TCU. TCU would still be good. We still got them ranked, obviously. So we got the Cowboys 9th, TCU 18th. Obviously, it's going to be... You know, at TCU, it's kind of a transition year. I would say they had a lot of seniors last year. They lose a lot on the mound. I mean, they'll still be talented. They did get Mitchell Traver back, which is kind of a bonus. But still, they're breaking in new starters. Brian Howard could be in there. They get Lucan Baker, a very talented freshman, to come to school. So that's big for them. But, I mean, they lose, you know, Cody Jones, who was the Big 12 Player of the Year. They lost several guys in that lineup. Jeremy Fannion, their first baseman, was their number two hole hitter in Omaha last year, if I remember right. So they're kind of going to need some guys to take on bigger roles. They do have Evan Skaug back, their catcher. Connor Wanhanen was very good. Both those guys are sophomores. So they'll be kind of they'll probably be more of the centerpieces of the offense this year. I mean, TCU, they'll still be competitive. You know, they'll figure it out on the mound. They always do with that. I mean, it's a pitching park. You know, it's kind of like Virginia. I mean, it's a pitching park, so that kind of gives them some margin for error. And they do have some talent offensively. So I think they're still the number two team there. Oklahoma's up there. They've got the top end talent with, you know, Alec Hansen and Sheldon Noisy. There are some questions, you know, after that. But I mean, we think they'll be good. So we've got them there at number 21. The rest of the big, obviously, the Big 12 was. It was an odd year last year, to say that, you know, to put it mildly. I mean, it would have been just a two-bid league if Texas doesn't win the conference tournament, which was just, I don't even know how to, it was just so weird that, you know, Oklahoma and Texas Tech both were good teams, but their RPIs got out of whack, so they were out of the mix. And, you know, I think both those, you know, Texas and Texas Tech should both be good again. I mean, Texas is kind of a interesting case. So there was a lot kind of going around that program last year. You know, they had to deal with some injuries in the middle of the year. They did play well at the end, winning that tournament. But and they like their arms. They should be competitive again. They'll probably be a regional team. Texas Tech is kind of they have the talent to be a regional team. Other than that, that's probably about it. West Virginia is kind of a sleeper. But yeah, I mean, the Big 12. It could be, you know, we might be looking at a four-bid league, but yeah, so at the top, pretty clearly got Oklahoma State, then TCU and Oklahoma, probably the next tier, and then kind of Texas Tech, kind of as the other possible regional teams. And, you know, just kind of go down from there with the Baylors, and Baylor got a new coaching staff, and K-State, Kansas, all those teams kind of further down. But yeah, it's Oklahoma State's pretty much the clear, pretty clearly the team to beat.
It is an interesting conference, and last year was just such a strange year. You know, we're looking for a little more normal year out of the Big 12, I guess. And, you know, but another conference that had a bit of a strange year was the Big 10, except theirs was...
In a good way.
It was a strange year in a very good way. Yeah, they get all those teams into regionals, you know, and Maryland gets to super regionals, and so did Illinois. Yes, Illinois, of course, the Big 10 champions, you know, with their massive winning streak in the middle of the year. There was a lot of good feeling about the Big Ten going into last season. You could kind of see that year, maybe not quite to that extent, but that year coming. And I don't know that we think that the Big Ten is going to be quite that good again this year, but I really do believe that the Big Ten is here to stay as a baseball conference that, you know, has to be reckoned with. You know, the idea that it's just a one-bid league anymore is, you know, I think those days are over. I think the conference and the schools have committed to making the baseball programs better now that they've got the Big Ten Network money in and everything else. And so this year we'd like Michigan to as the favorite in the Big Ten. You know, Michigan won the Big Ten tournament last year, and they bring a lot back. Carmen Benedetti, two-way guy, is a key for them, and you know, they bring starters back on the in the weekend, and you know, it's a veteran group, and Coach Eric Backich, you know, has had a few years now at Michigan to get his recruits in and get these guys up to speed, and I think the Wolverines are looking pretty good. It's going to be a little tight there at the top, though. You know, Michigan checks in at 15, and we don't have a second Big Ten team in.
So we thought about Maryland.
We considered Maryland. Maryland is one of the last teams out of the top 25. You know, and Mike Shawarin is a huge reason why. On Friday nights, he's going to be – Maryland is going to be very difficult to beat because they're going to throw Mike Shawarin. But, you know, they lost a lot from last year's team. But I really do think that they have enough there that it's going to be a good team again. And, you know, I would not be surprised to see them ranked – later on this season. And you got a veteran club at Indiana. Big Ten coaches really like Illinois still, despite all the losses that they had in the draft last year. And Iowa looks pretty good again as well. That's another regional team from last year. And so I think the Big Ten is going to be a fun league to watch. You know, there's a lot going on there. You know, right now it's only one team that we have ranked. But again, I think, you know, at various times during the year, you're going to see a few other Big Ten teams, you know, get into the rankings. That covers the, you know, the top half of this top 25. Moving on after Southern Cal at 16, we got Florida State, TCU, North Carolina State, Mississippi State, Oklahoma, Cal State Fullerton, Coastal Carolina, Mississippi, and Kentucky rounds it out at 25. So who jumps out from any of the rest of these teams for you guys?
Well, certainly, I mean, NC State's got some balance. They've got a lot of guys back. Brian Brown at the top of that rotation. It's going to be tough for him to be better than he was as a freshman and get a 2.03 ERA or something like that. So he set a high bar. But, I mean, he's got – obviously, he's a great guy to have back. Corey Wilder, Johnny Piedmont, those guys have experience. Lose Logan Ratledge in the lineup, but still they'll be a very good offensive team. You know, a lot of power with guys like you know, Joe Dinan, Preston Palmeiro, those guys. You know, Xavier LeGrand's an interesting freshman. You know, Brock Deathridge is a guy they're excited about. So that'll be a good team. That'll be a good balanced team at the in that second group in the ACC. After you have the Big Three, and then you kind of have, you know, FSU, NC State. You know, kind of add in Georgia Tech, a team that didn't rank, but we thought about. You know, excited about their offense. So yeah, those certainly there's like kind of that next group in the ACC. Those teams should all be competitive. Kind of talked about Oklahoma. I mean, Fullerton. Obviously, that's interesting just because they, you know, they lose Eshelman and obviously lost Justin Garza, was out for a lot of last year, but that'll be it'll be interesting to see what they do offensively with losing Davey Olmedo Barrera, who's kind of the linchpin of their offense last year. But that'll be an interesting team to watch. And Coastal's that's a program that's on its way back up. They had a couple lean years, but they got their new park, which is a beautiful new park, and that's just a team that churned. I mean, they're always, they were a physical offensive team last year, got to that College Station regional we talked about. They kind of were a little quiet there, kind of got upstaged by Cal and A&M, but I mean, that's another team we expect to be back in the mix.
For me, we had there were quite a few teams we talked about for that number 25 spot. We eventually settled on Kentucky, and obviously the SEC is a tough conference to navigate, but you look at what Kentucky brings back, and kind of similar to Louisville, not far down the road, they have, a returning senior pitcher that they probably didn't expect to have last year around this time, and Kyle Cody. And, he's a guy who has a chip on his shoulder. He has a lot to prove. He had, a down year last year. He seemed to kind of put it together at the end, though, and he's a guy with, a plus fastball. He's going to touch the mid 90s, and if he can improve his command and continue to work on his off-speed pitches and breaking ball, I mean, he could be a force, in the Sunday spot in that rotation. They also returned Zach Brown, a junior, who also has, tremendous stuff and is the ace of that staff, and a veteran and Dustin Begg. So it's a strong weekend rotation and a veteran weekend rotation, and they bring back a lot of veterans as well in the starting lineup, led by Javon Shelby. The Shelby family has been a part of Kentucky for a while now, and he's just the latest in a long line and is, kind of the leader of that team. It's an interesting group and a team that was right on the borderline last year and came, very close last year. And I know just from talking to Kyle Cody and a couple of players on the team, they have Omaha on their mind. They've said they've been saying the word Omaha, maybe 10 times more than they've ever said it in an off season, which is, it's not something you hear a lot around the Kentucky baseball program. So there's some excitement there. They're an intriguing team. Obviously they're at the very back of our top 25, and you could see them moving in either direction, but they're certainly a team to keep an eye on in a crowded SEC, as always.
This year, the SEC is really going to be a tough league, perhaps even more so than usual. The depth in the league is probably as good as it's been in a while. And, you look at a team like Mississippi State, who we have at number 20, and if you're looking for a team here in the last half or the last 5 to 10 teams that maybe could jump into the top half of the rankings or the top 10 by the end of the year, I think they're a candidate for that. They had a very poor year last year, had to battle a lot of injuries last year, but now that's over and guys are back to health, and they brought in an outstanding recruiting class that's going to give them some immediate help. And, as the season goes on and these guys learn how to play with each other, I think Mississippi State is going to be a team that by the time conference play rolls around, you're going to have to really consider, and they're going to be one of the better teams in the conference potentially. They do lose Butch Thompson, their outstanding pitching coach, goes and becomes the coach at Auburn. But they bring in Wes Johnson, who had been at Dallas Baptist, and Butch Thompson is an outstanding coach, but Wes Johnson is going to do a good job with that pitching staff himself, I think. So, I think Mississippi State is an intriguing team down here. Jim, you mentioned Coastal, and this might be Coastal's best team since 2010. And that was obviously an outstanding team, but this is a team that maybe is going to push them over the hump. They've been close to Omaha or thought they... thought of as Omaha contenders a few times, and maybe this is that level of team again. Florida State lost a lot, but they're kind of like some of these other teams we've talked about. There's talent there, and they should be pretty good once they all figure out how they fit into the open roles. So there's a lot of really talented teams down here, and it's going to be intriguing to see. So I guess before we wrap this up, just what is How do you guys feel, you know, going into the season? What are you most, you know, looking forward to this year?
You know, I think for me, one thing at least is, you know, the obviously last year a lot of talk was about the ball and how that would impact the game and whether it'd be more offensive, and you know, it was, you know, it, I think we saw some good results with that, and be curious to see, you know, if that was an operation, if that was a trend, you know. I'd be curious to see, you know, what the results are like this year with that. That's certainly something that I'm looking for. And, you know, obviously, you know, I wonder if, you know, if we do have another cold winter, you know, we do have an issue there. I wonder if there'll be, you know, more momentum for that push it back movement. I don't envision that necessarily, but, you know, that's one of the things I'm kind of curious to see as well as we get started here.
I mean, well, obviously the beer sales in Omaha, of course. No, I'm just, let's kind of see whoever the, you know, last year at Illinois kind of was that surprise team. I mean, just kind of, you know, that was unranked and obviously had an outstanding year. Just kind of see who, you know, who's going to be that team this year. I mean, that's, you know, Iowa was another team that was kind of like that. Maryland a couple years ago, not to limit it to Big Ten teams, but, you know, who's going to be that team that jumps out, has a, you know, kind of makes a surprising run to Supers or to Omaha or what have you. I mean, you know, kind of we've talked about, you know, we didn't rank Arkansas. I know that's kind of a, like you've talked during our meeting with about them, Teddy, as kind of your sleeper team. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of what I'm, that's what I'm most curious to see, who is just kind of who's the surprise. And certainly, you know, what happens with the, you know, with the new, they're not, if we can still call them the new baseballs, they're 2 years old now. But just how does that, you know, does that trend continue? That's certainly going to be something to keep monitoring. You know, and then once we do get to Omaha, aside from them selling beer, I mean, what, obviously the television ratings were down last year in the finals. So that was kind of a little, I don't know if I say concerning, but it's kind of jumped out that it was, I remember writing the finals between Virginia and Vandy were outrated by the finals of the Women's World Series, Softball World Series. So, I mean, obviously maybe if you get, you know, LSU and Texas or something against each other, maybe it'd be different, but, you know, how will that play? Will the games be any quicker? Because last year those games, even, I don't think they've tried to speed them up, but they still kind of dragged. So how will that pan out? You know, so that's kind of what, obviously that's further down the road, but those are things I'm kind of curious to see how they go.
Yeah, I think that is an interesting point about the ratings and the pace of play, and I think that's something that I'm curious to see as well. You know, obviously Virginia and Vanderbilt are marquee programs in college baseball, but we don't typically think of those schools as necessarily having, you know, the yeah, rabid fan base, yeah, of an LSU or a Tennessee or you know, a Texas or any of those schools, really. And part of that is just that Vanderbilt is a small private school, and there are just only so many Vanderbilt alumni out there relative to some of these other schools. So if we get a different finals, we haven't in a couple of years, but if we get a different finals, it will be interesting to see what the ratings do. And pace of play is going to be a thing that's talked about again, I would imagine. Mike mentioned the winner and the push it back movement, and I'm guessing we'll hear more about that. We've been hearing about that for a long time, so that's not going away.
We just had the news with the, you know, the agent stuff. I mean, that's a big development for college baseball. Just kind of, obviously there are bigger picture things afoot here that, I mean, it's going to be an interesting direction to see where college baseball is heading.
Absolutely. And you know, I think one of the things I'm excited about is you know, just seeing all the freshmen this year. I feel like this year there are a lot of really potentially impactful freshmen on some really good teams too. You know, when we talked about TCU, I mentioned Lucan Baker, who you know, is an incredible two-way talent, and you know, told teams that he didn't want to get drafted or that he didn't intend to sign if he got drafted, and so he's at TCU now, and they're going to rely on him a lot. And it seems like every Pac-12 team, when I was doing recruiting rankings, brought in one of their top recruits. UCLA brought in, you know, Hooper and Molnar, and Washington got Joe Demers, and Oregon State got Nick Madrigal and Caden Grenier, and you know, you just look up and down the conference, and they all pulled in these incredible players. Florida and Vanderbilt, obviously the top two recruiting classes in the country, you know, were loaded. and Georgia Tech brought in recruits. You know, we mentioned them as a team we considered, and their freshman class is a big part of that. I mentioned it with Mississippi State. I mean, there are just a lot of really good young players in college baseball that I'm excited to see how they make that adjustment. And that's one thing that we're definitely going to be talking about over the next few months.
I'm also curious to see how some of the top arms that we've talked about fare this year, because last year it seemed like there was just a rash of injuries and ineffectiveness with a lot of the top arms. And, you know, one week, you know, Machuelo was the top guy. The next week it's Funkhauser. The next week it's Dylan Tate. You know, just a lot of going back and forth. I'm kind of curious to see, you know, first of all, how guys like Funkhauser and Cody back, you know, come back this year. And then, you know, AJ Puck, how he does. Obviously, you know, last year dealing with that suspension early on, but he's got the stuff to be an elite guy and, you know, potentially the number one overall pick. So just kind of curious to see how those arms do. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the college baseball as a whole stays away from the Tommy John injuries that, you know, we saw last year. That's kind of what I'm looking at, too.
Yeah, hopefully it's a healthier spring for everyone.
A less snowy spring.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, warmer and more health. That would be fantastic. You know, last year's draft, you know, obviously when we were talking about that, it was constantly talking about, like, who was missing in action and who was coming back from injury and who was out for the year. So hopefully we can avoid that this year, both on the college and the high school side. So we'll be back over the next few weeks to continue with our college preview content. Again, through the rest of this week over at baseballamerica.com, you can see capsules for each of the top 25 teams. Next week, we'll have our All-America teams, and we'll probably be back talking about those on the podcast. And then the conference previews start. And then before you know it, it'll be February 19, and it'll be opening day. And we'll be back out at the ballpark, and we'll have actual baseball to talk about. And right now, it's exciting to talk about this preview stuff. But when we have actual baseball to talk about, it'll be even better. You know, that's coming very soon. So it's a great time to be reading Baseball America, to subscribe to Baseball America if you don't already. And, you know, hopefully you guys out there will enjoy all the content that's coming your way over at baseballamerica.com and in the magazine for the college preview. So, you know, thank you for listening. Thanks to Jim and Mike for joining me here. We'll have another college podcast coming to you soon. So go out there, enjoy the baseball, and thanks for listening.